It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hi, everybody. And we enter this week with the biggest law that was supposed to be passed this summer, dead for now in the House of Representatives, immigration reform, with the fate of millions of immigrants at stake, perhaps the fate of the economy, and perhaps the fate of the Republican Party. Politics correspondent Molly Ball has been writing about this for The Atlantic magazine and joins us now to begin our week. We will also touch on whether Washington is likely to get involved in the George Zimmerman case after all or to bail out Detroit. Hi, Molly. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Great to be here.
Now, I think I saw you just tweeted out something about how coming on the show is almost as much fun as sleeping in. Is that what you said?
I have a newborn at home. You've got to forgive me. Sleeping in sounds like paradise to me. It was not intended as a slight to the show.
Sleeping in is everything when you have a newborn. I've been there.
Just about.
So here is an exchange on CBS Face the Nation yesterday between House Speaker John Boehner and the host Bob Schieffer. Boehner was asked if he will bring the Senate immigration bill to a vote.
The House does not like the Senate bill. You know, it's one big, massive bill that, in my opinion, doesn't have enough serious triggers to protect our border.
But would you allow, would you allow a bill on the floor that provides a path to citizenship for those 11 million people?
What we're going to do in the House is we're dealing with this in a common sense, step-by-step approach. We want to deal with this in chunks that the members can deal with and grapple with, and, frankly, chunks that the American people can get their arms around.
Are you not going to answer that question?
It is not about me.
No,
This is about allowing the House to work its will.
Would you allow that to happen?
This is about bringing these bills out here in a common sense way. And I'm not going to predict what's going to be on the floor and what isn't going to be on the floor. Now, that's what you're asking me to do. I can't do that.
About a minute of John Boehner, the House Speaker, with CBS Face the Nation host Bob Schieffer. And Molly, Schieffer was pushing and pushing and pushing. So let me ask you, as an analyst, the question that John Boehner wouldn't answer, and that is there a road to yes in the House for any version of an immigration bill that includes a path to citizenship for those now here illegally?
I think there is. You know, there's a lot of pessimism about the bill, which is also certainly justified. And the Senate bill, as Boehner said, is not going to come up for a vote in the House. But, you know, the Republicans had this meeting a couple of weeks ago, the entire Republican House caucus, and it was sort of an opportunity for people to vent and have their say about what would be the path forward, all the different members of Congress. They came out of that meeting not having a plan, but also not saying that they wouldn't do anything. And in fact, Boehner saying very strongly, we've got to do something about this. We can't just not do anything about immigration. He clearly feels some pressure to do something on the issue of immigration. Is it going to be something that is comprehensive, that has that path to citizenship? Most people who are working on this issue think Boehner would like to. The question is how far along he can bring those members on the far right flank who do not want to see a bill like that.
And you wrote this up in The Atlantic the other day as a fight for the soul of the Republican Party. Why put it in those stark terms?
Well, because if you look at this is a real split within the GOP between the sort of hard right, the sort of implacable hardliners who don't want to see any kind of legalization for illegal immigrants. And then you've got this incredible mass of establishment Republicans, the Republican National Committee itself, Karl Rove and George W. Bush and a lot of members of that administration. You've got Grover Norquist. You've got the major donors of the GOP, think tanks like the Cato Institute. So it's really a test of whether that Republican establishment, which has been so sort of on the ropes and battered for the last few years, can sort of take the party back from the sort of angry grassroots that has sort of overrun the party institutions and really been running the show since the sort of primaries of the 2010 Tea Party wave when they really made their mark.
And this is somewhat about redistricting. The reason that almost the entire Republican establishment, including business leaders and et cetera, as you were listing, are aligned against the Tea Party here, is that the House has so many very safe Republican seats that have populations opposed to comprehensive immigration reform that Tea Party members prevail in those elections, and so many individual House members will vote against what might be in the best interest of the party nationally, especially in presidential elections, as we saw in 2012. But, you know, there are many Republicans who will argue that the future of the party cannot be seen to rest solely on allowing people here illegally to stay and become citizens. It's got to be more complicated than that, whether the Republicans have a future in presidential elections. Do they have a case that this is being overplayed by especially the media?
Of course. This is not a panacea. And nobody thinks that Republicans will pass immigration reform and suddenly get, you know, 60% of the Hispanic vote. But talking to nonpartisan pollsters who have looked at this issue very closely, you know, the Hispanic community was not thrilled with the Democrats last time around, was not thrilled with Obama. And it was only, number one, because of the executive action that he took on the so-called Dreamers, and number two, by sort of whipping them up with anger against the potential alternative, that the Democrats were able to do so tremendously well with the Hispanic vote last time. So there is a real opening for Republicans with that demographic. But again, I think it's a larger symbolic issue about whether Republicans can combat this perception that they are a party of old white men. That is a perception that hurts them not just with Hispanics, but with young voters, with minority voters of all across the spectrum. And you know, whether Republicans can look constructive, whether they can appear to be at the table and wanting to solve problems, or whether they do seem to be striking the pose of a sort of purely opposition party.
And before we move on to some other things, just one other observation about the outsized power of the Tea Party wing these days. In the House, the Republicans are a party with a large majority of seats, but not a majority of votes. I think one of the under-discussed results of the 2012 election was that because of all this redistricting that took place after 2010, when Republicans did so well in statewide elections, state house elections, that all those state legislatures were able to go and create Republican-friendly lines, we saw an election in 2012 where a majority of Americans voted Democrat for House of Representatives seats, but the Republicans still hold this majority.
That's correct. And it's also true. I mean, I wrote over the weekend about this conceit of the majority of the majority, the so-called Hastert rule, that John Boehner has now violated several times to get legislation passed. And I looked at it through the lens of the former Speaker Tip O'Neill, who also frequently violated that rule because he was dealing with a Democratic caucus in the 1980s that was a partisan majority, but it was not an ideological majority. He had a lot of conservative Democrats and a lot of liberal Democrats, and so he frequently passed legislation primarily with Republican votes. Republicans hate it when John Boehner passes legislation primarily with Democratic votes, but that is something that he might have to do again to pass immigration if he decides that he can do that without losing his speakership, which I think is the other thing he's got his eye on.
Molly Ball, politics writer for The Atlantic Magazine, with us. Let me put out a couple of questions for our listeners as we begin to go through some other topics here, some other politics here. Number one, if there are any Republicans listening with a strong position on this immigration reform debate, one way or another, do you think this is what your party needs to survive nationally to go with this? Or do you say, hold the line on comprehensive immigration reform for whatever reason? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And the other question I'll throw out there for this segment is, should Washington bail out Detroit? 212-433-WNYC. What do you think? New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, anybody else who's listening? We remember Washington to Ford to New York dropped dead once upon a time, or at least we've read about it. How about Obama to Detroit, or Congress to Detroit? Should they help bail out the city because of its not unique, but still extremely unusual financial problems for a major city in America? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So Molly Boehner was not eager to talk about the Senate immigration bill in that interview, as we heard, though he did when asked. He was much more eager to turn the tables and urge the Senate to delay the Obamacare insurance mandates, which the House has done repeatedly. Listen.
The senators know, and the Democrat senators know, that this law is unworkable. They know it's not ready. It was Max Baucus, Senate chairman, Democrat chairman of the Finance Committee, who said that this was a train wreck. They know it's a train wreck, so I wouldn't be so quick to suggest that they're never going to take this up. Matter of fact, I would urge Senator Harry Reid, the majority leader, put these two bills on the floor of the Senate to delay the employer mandate and to delay the individual mandate, and let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens, says John Boehner on Face the Nation. So, Molly Ball, I don't want to get bogged down on Obamacare, which is so easy to do, but just this one question. As the House refuses to vote on the Senate immigration bill, is there any chance the Senate will vote on the House Obamacare bills?
That's easy, no. But, you know, it's a similar situation where Obamacare is politically unpopular, and there is a chance that if it went to the floor of the Senate, you would have enough sort of politically vulnerable or conservative Democrats voting against Obamacare that something like that, like what the House has passed, could actually pass the Senate, and thus it will never get to the floor of the Senate because Harry Reid's not going to let that happen.
They're setting up a 2014 election conversation, right? If Obamacare
Absolutely.
Remains unpopular in some quarters, and of course it's, you know, it's becoming popular, it's becoming unpopular. It depends on where you sit, on what you think, on whether you're being affected or not, whether you're being helped by some of the benefits that are already out there. It's a complicated public opinion issue. But this is to some degree attacked by Boehner to put senators on the defensive, Democratic senators, in the 2014 election, correct?
Well, and also to take ownership of a political issue for the Republicans that they are on much surer footing on because Obamacare is unpopular. And Republicans remember very, very well how the anger over Obamacare propelled them to victory in 2010. The Democrats are nervous about this. Democrats know that this is a tough issue for them. And while the implementation is still happening, you know, in a lot of ways, this is sort of the most crucial moment for Obamacare is can it get through this phase of implementation without, you know, triggering some kind of massive backlash as the most far-reaching components of the bill start to actually go into effect. The Democrats do feel it is not going to be as bad as 2010. Number one, because even though people don't like the law, the idea of repealing it is not popular. People want to move on. They feel that this is a battle of the past that's still being relitigated, and they'd like to move forward into the future.
James in the Bronx, you're calling to recommend that the Republicans hold the line on immigration reform?
Yes, because the first amnesty, the Hispanic vote was reduced for Republicans in 1988. Didn't do them any good, and won't do them any good this time.
James, thank you. Do you know if that's true? After what he's referring to as the first amnesty, the Reagan signed immigration reform bill, which I think they even called it amnesty in those days, mm-hmm. in 86, that Republicans did worse with Latino voters in 88. Do you happen to know if that's historically a fact?
I do not happen to know that, and I'd be interested to go back and look. We have seen Republican candidates who favored immigration reform do better with the Hispanic vote, notably George W. Bush, who did quite well with Hispanic voters. But I don't know about 1988.
April in Queens, same argument, April?
Yes, no, definitely. I don't like how Mr. Boehner is being like pushed to say something that he's not ready to say. There are so many Republicans who and conservatives that believe that we are rewarding people who broke the laws of our country. And I don't know any other country that rewards people like this, especially when we have, you know, a group of people who are waiting on the waiting list legally. And it is hurting our country. It is taking jobs. And it's only a particular group of people whose jobs are being taken by the illegal, you know, aliens that are here. And people just think, oh, they're taking jobs people don't want. It's high school dropouts that are trying to pick themselves up, people on the lower end of the educational level, and they can't get these jobs, the dishwashing jobs, the jobs working in plumbing and landscaping and, you know, child care. I mean, I see it constantly. The only people who aren't being hurt by it are highly educated people. the people on the other end, they can't keep the jobs because what I feel is the employers, we should be looking at the employers of these people.
And April, I'm going to leave it there, but you raise, you know, a bunch of issues. And, of course, that 1986 bill was supposed to have a crackdown on employers who hire people here illegally, and that wasn't as effective as they hoped it would be. By the way, we looked at that stat, Molly, and for everybody's interest, 1984 – it's not totally apples to apples because the candidates are different, but in 1984, Reagan got 37% of the Hispanic vote. In 1988, George H.W. Bush, running for president, got 30%, according to the Pew website. So to some degree, what the first caller said is true. All right, let's move on. Detroit. Here's an exchange on Meet the Press yesterday where they play a clip of President Obama arguing for the auto company's bailout. This was back early in his administration, followed by the host, David Gregory, asking the former governor of Michigan, Jennifer Granholm, about that moment in the context of, was the president promising to bail out Detroit in the way that it might need a bailout now, the city government? So again, this begins with the president from his first term, then David Gregory's question.
We refuse to throw in the towel and do nothing. We refuse to let Detroit go bankrupt. I bet on American workers and American ingenuity, and 3 years later, that bet is paying off in a big way.
And good morning to all of you. Governor Granholm, when the president speaks about Detroit, he doesn't mean the city of Detroit.
Right.
He means the auto companies. They got better, Detroit did not.
Right, and that's a really important distinction because people are assuming that when he said we're not going to let Detroit go bankrupt, that he meant Detroit the city. It's two different entities.
So that from Meet the Press. And Molly Ball, any chance the federal government will ease the shock of the city's bankruptcy, or with apologies to that old New York headline, will this be Washington to Detroit drop dead?
Well, at this point, Detroit isn't asking for a bailout. And we did see Jay Carney get a bunch of questions on this in the briefing on Friday, and he was also very noncommittal. The governor of Michigan, the current governor, says they're not looking for federal help at this point. The person supervising the bankruptcy for Detroit also saying that they're not expecting this. So at this point, there don't seem to be any commitments or any really sought. It's the early stages of the bankruptcy. They seem to be trying to sort it out primarily with the creditors and not seeking a bailout at this point. Although, as you point out, it is politically awkward for the president who campaigned so aggressively on bailing out the city's major industry.
Get a couple of calls on this. Cleo in Morris Township, you're on WNYC. Should Washington
Brian,
get involved?
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I hope you can hear me.
Sure can.
Okay, wonderful. I think we have to do something. We spend so much money all over the world to people who really don't care or like us, and we're going to let our own citizens down? We can't do that.
Cleo, thank you. And Hassan in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Hassan.
How you doing, Brian? I never agree with the bailouts in 08, to be honest, but my point is, you know, the Federal Reserve, we print $85 billion a month. I mean, to me, it seems pretty easy to bail out Detroit if we really wanted to.
Hassan, thank
you. Now, even I don't agree with a bailout or, you know, I think bankruptcy is capitalism, free market. You got to let people go bankrupt. But we could easily do it if we wanted to, correct?
And did you tell our screener that bailing out? Oh, I see. No, Hassan, thank you very much. Actually, I'm going to get one more call in here. Simeon in Morristown, you wanted to talk about bailing out Detroit as really bailing out the banks?
I mean, honestly, isn't that where this is all going? I mean, when you look back at all the bailouts we did with the TARP money and everything, it just seems like it's this bad lending where they gave these banks money. I mean, the banks gave the city money that they knew they were going to be risky loans. I mean, people was a mass exodus. Jobs were going downhill. They knew this for years. So all of a sudden, we pour money into them through the banking industry. Can't we somehow separate, if we're going to bail them out, the people who did the work, who have all their retirement set up, and they're only going to get paid 3 cents on the dollar in their retirement, maybe we could separate them out from the banks? Because these banks, are they learning anything? Aren't we going to go right back into this whole whirlwind in another 8 years to where all of a sudden they're going to be too big to fail, and we're going to pick up these tabs again? When's anybody going to, like a little kid, when he gets yelled at by his parents, either you yell at the kid and you discipline him, are you going bailing out time and time again? What's going to be learned here? I mean, aren't we just going to retrace the same paths?
Simeon, thank you very much. And Molly Ball, we're running out of time, but what a little sequence of calls. The first caller saying, if we send foreign aid to poor cities in other countries that don't even like us, she added, we should be bailing out our own cities. The second caller said, hey, this is their responsibility. It's a free market. Of course, not the free market. It's the government, but still. The third caller said, we would just be bailing out the banks. So to the second caller's question, he said we could. Washington could do it easily if they wanted. Could Washington make Detroit whole, at least whole enough that the retirees who've been promised pensions wouldn't have to take cuts in those for the rest of their lives? Could the city be bailed out easily by D.C. if they had the political will?
Oh, sure. With political will, anything is possible. But what I think you see from the last caller's anger is there lawmakers and administration officials are so gun-shy about that B word, the word bailout, because it triggers so much residual public anger over what we experienced in 2008 and the bank bailouts and this whole idea. I mean, a lot of the anger that exists out there is not directed at one party or another, but at Washington and the Congress overall. Mm. And this idea that they are working for, you know, the sort of big institutions and not sort of working for the little guy. So you see that in people's anger at the mere idea of a 1,000-page bill, no matter what's in it, that John Boehner was talking about. And you see that at any idea that banks are going to get bailed out. So I think they're going to be very skittish about the prospect
and
of doing anything like that.
That's a fight that's just starting to take place now, is assuming that Detroit actually is in bankruptcy and doesn't get bailed out by Washington. How much are the banks going to have to get pennies on the dollar that they've loaned, the dollars that they've loaned, and how much are the retirees going to have to lose some of the pensions that they were told they could depend on, and other cuts to city services, police, and everything else. So I think that's a story that is just starting to be told. Molly Ball, politics reporter for The Atlantic, thank you so much for getting us off on a good foot this week. Thank you, Molly.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we'll ask the New York City Comptroller, John Liu, could Detroit happen here? Stay with us.